Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The people of the Nuba Mountains, located in northeast Africa, just north of the new nation of South Sudan, are in a crisis that may well threaten their very survival. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with retired professor Sam Totten, a previous guest on Radio Curious. He's the author of Genocide by Attrition, Nuba Mountains, Sudan, and an oral and documentary history of the Darfur genocide. Professor Totten returned from a two-week visit to the Nuba Mountains on January 11, 2013. He and I visited by phone from his home near Fayetteville, Arkansas, on January 13, 2013, and began with his description of what caused the civil war in Sudan.
Suffering ongoing violent crises off and on for the past 50-plus years. There was the 20-year civil war from 1984 to 2004 between the North and the South that resulted in about 2 million deaths.
What were the issues in the 20-year civil war, and what are the issues in the current conflicts?
Well, the issue in regard to the Civil War, there were many, actually. Disenfranchisement of the people in the South, land issues, issues over religious freedom. The people in the North are fundamentalist Muslims. They looked askance at the Christians in the South, as well as those individuals who practiced animism, traditional religious practices, and looked askance as well at Muslims who were not fundamentalists, who did not agree to Sharia law. And basically the people in the South were fighting for what they considered their religious rights and civil rights and basic human rights. Approximately 2 million people were killed in the process. It finally came to a conclusion in 2005 with the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, the CPA, which involved diplomatic efforts by the international community. Ultimately, the South had a referendum to decide whether it was going to remain with the North or to establish its own nation. And ultimately, the people of the South, by an astonishing margin, it was about 99% in favor of establishing a separate nation, established the new state of South Sudan. The situation currently in the Nuba Mountains, which is, I should note, in the state of South Kordofan, which is in Sudan, and South Kordofan borders the border between Sudan and South Sudan, and that's, again, where the Nuba Mountains is located, in the heart of South Kordofan. The people in South Kordofan, and particularly the Nuba Mountains people, fought with the people of the South. They were cut out of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement by the international community. So the people of South Kordofan felt that they were left out and left high and dry, and ultimately, when the South became a separate nation, the people of the Nuba Mountains were left as part of the North and under the dictatorship of Omar al-Bashir, and they resented that greatly.
Sam Totten, tell us who the Nuba Mountains people are.
The Nuba Mountains people are comprised of roughly 50-plus tribes. And the people themselves are a mixture of Christians, Muslims, and animists. Basically, perceive themselves as a separate culture, a separate entity, and really want to be left alone, and they do not want to suffer the dictates of the government of Sudan, and they were fearful that the government of Sudan was going to apply Sharia law throughout the entire country. In fact, Omar al-Bashir, the dictator, stated such.
Why were they left out of the peace conferences?
As I mentioned, it would have involved another large chunk of Sudan's territory being given to the South if the people of the South had decided to go, which they did, with a separate nation. So it was a rather arbitrary decision by the international community. The border was established as having South Kordofan and the Nuba Mountains remain with Sudan.
So tell us, Sam Totten, what's going on now in the Nuba Mountains in the winter of 2013?
There's been an all-out war in the Nuba Mountains since June of 2011. And since that time, the government of Sudan has bombed the Nuba Mountains with Antonov bombers on a daily basis. And they primarily bomb areas that are heavily populated, meaning those areas where people, large numbers of people, congregate. So it would be the souks or the open marketplaces. It would be schools, churches, mosques, and or humanitarian groups that have fairly decent-sized compounds. At the same time, there's a ground war going on, and the ground war has been fought since June 2011. The rebel group, the SPLM North, the Sudanese People Liberation Movement Army North, has been routing the Sudanese government army in town after town after town. And the focus today is on Kadugli, the capital of South Kordofan. And there's been an ongoing battle for months there. The rebel group is fairly confident that it's going to overtake Kadugli, and it's just a matter of time before that happens. But there's been a lot of killing out there going on. While I was out there, interestingly, reportedly 144 soldiers from Sudan's military gave themselves up to the rebel group. Actually, 144 walked out in the desert and gave themselves up.
Sam, in a letter that you wrote on January 9th of 2013, you had just returned to Nairobi, Kenya from the Nuba Mountains. Obviously, from your letter, you were present during the bombs being dropped. Can you describe that, what it was like?
It was an unnerving situation in many respects. First of all, one is generally accustomed to hearing planes fly overhead in the United States, and you generally don't think, give much thought to the sound of the planes. But there, the government of Sudan in the Nuba Mountains has basically established a no-fly zone. And what that means, basically, is that nobody but the military, and meaning the Sudanese military, fly planes overhead. And so whenever you hear a plane overhead, you automatically know that it's a bomber coming in. It's either a Antonov bomber or a MiG coming in and potentially bombing some area. And, of course, you don't know what area it's going to bomb. So initially, I would hear these planes coming overhead, and I wouldn't think too much about it. And all of a sudden, either people would jump up and start running for cover, or it would all suddenly dawn on me if I was inside a tukul, which is what I lived in there, the dirt brick round edifices with the conical straw roofs. I would hear the plane, and all of a sudden it would dawn on me, I've got to get out of this thing and find a space to crouch down into. And what I found in all of the compounds that people have, and they generally put their tukuls in groups of between 4 and 5 and 20 tukuls, each little compound will have, and does have, these holes that are dug And they're basically about 4 by 4 by 6, 7, 8 feet deep. And when the planes come over, people head to those holes and they jump in them automatically. And some areas will have up to 15 of those holes around their compound. And so right away, people head to those things, and some people will stay by the lip of the hole. Others will jump in right away. And what has happened over the months, I understand, is that initially, going back to June, July, August, September, October, people didn't have those holes dug, and people were fairly cavalier about seeking proper shelter. And what I mean by that is that they recommend if there's not a hole to jump in, find a culvert or something, or a ditch or anything that's lower than the ground and has walls on the side so that you can try to avoid the shrapnel that's going to fly off of these bombs. And at the same time, and not every day, but and it depends on where you're at, when these Antonovs fly over, and oftentimes they're very, very high in the sky, so you can barely see them, but you can hear them, you'll hear anti-aircraft fire blasting away at them. And when they drop the bombs, you don't know where they're going to drop them, and they make a very shrill sound coming down, and when they explode, like I said, the shrapnel just flies, and big pieces fly off, and if they hit somebody, and they often do, the results are oftentimes absolutely horrific. I mean, there were people who had been hit in the legs. They had their legs sheared off. There were people who had their heads sheared off. There were people whose bodies were sheared in half. There were people who had their legs or trunks of their bodies cut badly and then would bleed to death. So all of these things are happening on a regular basis. Now, a lot of these bombs also fly into fields. They don't hit anybody. But one has to appreciate that what it's done is it's prevented people, due to the stark fear that they have, from going out and working their fields the way they usually do, which has resulted in not having enough food to eat, which is another situation up there that is dire. It's also resulted in people living in caves full-time, meaning that they've left their tools and they've gone up into the caves to live because they're fearful of being killed if they remain down on the flatter part of the of their farms or remain in their tools.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Samuel Totten, a professor emeritus from the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. He's the author of Genocide by Attrition, Nuba Mountains, Sudan. He just returned 3 days ago from the date of this recording from the Nuba Mountains. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Sam, in your December 3rd, 2012 letter to the Atrocities Prevention Board in Washington, D.C., that was initiated by President Obama, you're obviously seeking to prevent atrocities. You've mentioned some of what you saw in your recent visit to Sudan. What else is going on, particularly in terms of genocide by attrition, the title of your book?
Right, and I'm glad you asked that. I want to make this very clear. The book, Genocide by Attrition, though it just came out in 2012, is about what transpired in the Nuba Mountains in the 1990s. And during that period, in the period of the Civil War, the Sudanese government went in and carried out basically a scorched earth policy the way it has in Darfur throughout the past decade. And that is, they went in and they attacked on the ground and through the air, village after village, farm after farm after farm, and forced the people up into the mountains at that time and basically cut off the farms from the people, so they were cut off from their produce and any stores of food they may have had. And the government of Sudan also prevented any humanitarian aid from coming in. As a result, people had to resort to eating roots in leaves of trees, in insects, and many people died of starvation. So that was in the 1990s. Now, people today are saying, well, it's genocide all over again. I don't agree with that. What it certainly is at this point in time is, number one, it's a war between the rebel groups, the SPLM North, and Khartoum, but at the same time, the farms have been attacked. The people are up in the caves. There are roughly 50 to 60,000 refugees now in South Sudan from the Nuba Mountains. But while the people have been suffering malnutrition and severe malnutrition today, and there have been some cases of outright starvation, the situation is vastly different today, at least thus far in the Nuba Mountains. I would not say that it's a case of genocide by attrition today, but I would say that there's a possibility that it's heading in that direction. I've found over the past 6 months or so that many people have been using the term genocide rather loosely in regard to what's taking part in the Nuba Mountains, which is a disservice, really. I mean, to correctly explain what it is, I would say that these bombings are definitely crimes against humanity. It's a case of ethnic cleansing. And there are projections, I should note, by some noted individuals with humanitarian groups in the Nuba Mountains and who have lived in the Nuba Mountains for the past 6 years or so, who project that if the international community does not get food up to the people at this point in time so that they can store it, or if these planes do not halt the bombings, the next rainy season we may see, in fact, mass starvation. And then we would be moving into a case of genocide by attrition again.
President Obama set up the Atrocities Prevention Board. What's your comment on that?
Well, initially I was hopeful that his administration was really going to take the lead on genocide prevention. However, it seems to be more cosmetic than anything, and what was particularly disappointing is that 60-plus genocide scholars signed the letter that we sent to that board back in early December. We never heard a single word from the board. Now that I've gotten back, I'm going to resend it, and we'll see what happens. But not a word. Very, very disappointing.
Sam Totten, what are you seeking to achieve in your December 3rd letter to the Atrocities Prevention Board?
Well, one was to get some sort of reaction in regard to what the United States government is actually doing in response to the crisis in the Nuba Mountains. One of the individuals that is on that Atrocities Prevention Board is a person named Samantha Power, who wrote a book, I believe it was back in 2003, called The Problem from Hell, America in the Age of Genocide. And she was very adamant that she wasn't in the government at that time. She was at the Harvard University Carr Center for Human Rights. She was very adamant that both governments, individual governments, the international community, and individual citizens in various nations had a responsibility to speak out when crimes against humanity, ethnic cleansing, and the possibility of genocide was going to be perpetrated or was being perpetrated. And I find it very ironic and sad that she's a member of this atrocities board, prevention board, and she hasn't spoken out at all about this crisis in the Nuba Mountains. And so it was to put pressure on this organization that's been established by President Obama, purportedly to address this instances of genocide or situations that were slouching towards genocide, to act and to act early. And nobody, as far as I know, has heard anything from this organization that's been touted as being the most forward-thinking of all administrations vis-a-vis the issue of genocide. So basically was to let them know that all of these scholars across the globe are watching this this board and wondering what it's doing and why it's remained silent thus far. That letter that I sent that you mentioned, we got no response to that. Absolutely zero.
So what is your suggestion as to where this is going to lead?
Well, it's very complicated, and that's basically what I found out a lot more about when I was there. There are all sorts of possibilities in regard to where it may lead, so it's pure conjecture at this point. But I can tell you this, the rebel group is intent on taking Kadugli, and they figure that once they get the capital of South Kordofan, they will control the state of South Kordofan. And there are some who are saying that once they control the state, they may call for a referendum to see if the people wish to establish their own state. That is, remove themselves from under the government of Sudan. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that various rebel groups, both from Darfur, as well as the Blue Nile and the Nuba Mountains, are saying that once Kadugli is taken, and once the rebels in the Blue Nile gain control, an organization called JEM, Justice and Equality Movement, from Darfur, will join these two rebel groups, and they plan on going all the way to Khartoum to take Khartoum over. And then, so they say, establish a state that is going to be predicated on international human rights. And that, of course, is easier said than done. And that will result in a whole new set of concerns and issues that will have to be resolved, and probably not easily. But the other thing that I'm looking at is, right now, food is getting up into the Nuba Mountains, but it's estimated that about 500,000 tons went up this past year, and that's about a third of what's needed. And so if the rainy season hits, as I mentioned before, and there's not ample food in the area, we're looking at potential mass starvation. And any genocide scholar will say the time to address the potential for genocide is way, way before one knows that it's actually genocide. That is, once genocide hits, then, the people are dying by large numbers. So this is the time before the rainy season to get the food in, because once the rainy season hits, it's virtually impossible for any type of vehicle to travel in the Nuba Mountains because the rain is that heavy. It turns the roads into mud. The wadis are full, and nobody gets up there in ground vehicles. And again, as I said, the Sudanese government has basically established no-fly zones. So all of those people were still up there if there's not enough food for them. And they're already beginning to eat food that they would normally eat in April and May. There will be mass starvation.
Sam Totten, just very briefly, if somebody wants more information on this issue, where can they find it?
Well, the introduction to my book and the afterword to my book, Genocide by Attrition, Nuba Mountain, Sudan, address both the 1990s as well as what's happening today. So that's a good place to start right now, because it gives both a historical overview as well as addresses the contemporary situation. It's published by Transaction Publishers in New Jersey. Came out in 2012, and actually right now I'm also working on revising it based on my latest findings in the Nuba Mountains.
Well, Sam Totten, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about a eureka or an aha moment that shifted the paradigm of your life?
I can. It's very clear to me, and I think about it often. I just graduated as an English major, as an undergraduate English major, and like a lot of English majors, my goal at that time was to write and get a novel published. So I moved to San Francisco. Long story short, each evening I went into Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the Beat Poets City Lights bookshop, to read. And so every night I would go into the same table, pull off the same books off the shelf. They were very kind about that, allowed people to do that. One evening I went in and there was a magazine on the desk or the table where I usually sat, and across the cover it said Torture in Chile, and by an article by Rose Syron, well-known human rights activist. And I read that and I was shocked because I thought I was fairly well-informed. Obviously, I found out that I wasn't, because I had no idea how pervasive human rights violations such as torture were in the world, how ubiquitous they were. And that virtually changed my life. When I read that, I pretty much decided at that point in time that I was going to work on the behalf of those who were denied their basic rights. I had little idea how that would evolve over the years. But it has resulted in basically shaping my life and my life's work.
And that was in 1973?
That was in about, 73, right. That's right, 1973, 74, right around there, exactly.
And Sam Totten, what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
I actually do think about that all the time, and that's a great question. I know that I'll continue to work on this issue of genocide prevention. But I'm also at the point in my life, I recently retired from the university, and though I did retire, I'm still conducting the research that I've been conducting over the past 25 years, that is, into genocide. I will continue that, but I'm also trying to get back to my original dream of writing and publishing a really solid novel. So in between my work now on genocide, I'm working on several novels.
And finally, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
I think a book that is definitely worth taking a look at is called The World and Darfur, International Response to Crimes Against Humanity in Western Sudan. It's edited by a professor named Amanda F. period, and I'm not sure how you pronounce her last name, G-R-Z-Y-B.
Professor Sam Totten, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it.
Sam Totten is a retired professor and author of Genocide by Attrition, Nuba Mountains, Sudan, and an oral and documentary history of the Darfur genocide. The book he recommends is The World of Darfur, International Response to Crimes Against Humanity in Western Sudan by Amanda Grissom and Romeo Dyer. This program was recorded on January 13, 2013. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. Our address is 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.